Missing Braves baseball? Yeah, us too. So Nick and Chris are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Braves' 1995 World Series title as they're joined each week by a member of the 95 team.
Mark gets the sign. The wind and the pitch. Here it is. Swung. Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship.
Only here on the home of the Braves, The Fan.
Eight scoreless innings, one hit ball. Tom Glavine joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Tom, does it seem like 25 years?
No, it doesn't. I mean, in a lot of ways, no. I mean, obviously, I look around now in my own house and I see, 25-year-old kids and 21-year-old kids that weren't around back then. But, so that makes you realize it is. But I think in a lot of ways, when I look at my playing career, it's hard to believe that was 25 years ago.
So Tony Pena gets a hit off of you. Jim Poole comes to the plate. What's going through your head at that point? What's Hargrove nuts? What's he doing here?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know that there was that much going through my mind in terms of that. I think it was more not getting caught up in the fact that the no-hitter was gone. Not that I ever really thought in that situation against that team that I was going to throw a no-hitter, but I think at that stage of the game, it had obviously started to swell a little bit, and it had become, I think people had become a little bit more aware of it. I was aware of it, not so much, like I said, in the sense that, oh my God, I might throw a no-hitter. I just knew it was there, and I kind of wanted to keep that momentum going as long as I could. So when Pena got that hit, I think my mindset was less about, Jim Poole and what the Indians are doing, and more about kind of keeping myself gathered and focused on the moment and not focused on the fact that, okay, the no hitter is gone. I gave up a hit, don't give them any momentum, that kind of thing. I was trying to get back into the moment of what I was doing.
I've never asked you this. Did you even know who the hell Jim Poole was? Because I'm assuming you're assuming there's no report on Jim Poole. This guy will never have a bat in his hand. Did you know who he was?
No, I didn't. I mean, I knew who he was, obviously, as a pitcher. I had no idea as a hitter. I mean, I think you're thinking as a pitcher, okay, this guy's an American League hitter, American League pitcher. He probably hadn't swung the bat very much, so advantage me. Just kind of go about your business. So, no, I didn't know a whole lot about him other than that he was a left-handed pitcher.
All right, we'll get to 95 in a second. Do you remember how many games you guys lost in 1990?
It was close to 100, if not over 100.
It was 97. Do you know how many games out you were?
I think we were mathematically eliminated by Memorial Day, so probably,
26 games out. The reason I asked, do you know how many games the Minnesota Twins were out of first place in 1990? Because it sets up for the obviously worst to first, greatest World Series ever, except nobody will give it that credit. They finished 29 games out. You guys were better than them in that regard.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine there was a team worse, I guess, right? But, it's a crazy turnaround, really. That's why, when everybody asks, did you guys see something coming? The question is yes, to some extent. We saw that we had some good young players in 1990. The second half of 1990 was actually pretty good. Our pitching staff, I want to say we lowered our ERA the second half of the year by almost 2 runs, maybe. So there were signs that we were getting better, but nobody in their right mind would have told you, yeah, we're getting ready to go on a run here that's going to be unprecedented in the game of baseball. Nobody in their right mind saw that, but we knew we were getting better.
Hall of Famer Tom Glavine joins us to look back at 95 and then some on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. We know that you told your teammates what you told them in the dugout during that game 6. When do you really feel like you're in a groove in that game?
I would say it was pretty early on. Obviously, everybody knows my first inning struggles. And that was always a concern for me. As much as I tried not to think about it, let's face it, it was always a part of my game and something that, I tried a whole lot of things to try and rectify and nothing changed it. It was what it was. So I think for me, it was really like I've said many times, my warm up in the bullpen that night was really, really good. And I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that either, because like I've said, there are times where I've thrown a really good bullpen and gone into a game, and it's like something I forgot to bring something with me to the dugout, and I get out on the mound, and it's like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then there were other days where I'd warm up and go, holy crap, I'm not going to last an inning, and I threw a shutout. So, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen from the time you get, you know, cross those lines and get out there and actually start trying to get guys out. So for me, given all of that, and my first inning troubles, I knew that when I went out there in that first inning and had an easy first inning, I knew that what I had in the bullpen I brought with me out on the field, and then it was just kind of a matter of trying to build into it. And I want to say that first time through the lineup, I knew I was pretty locked in.
Tommy, I don't want to play the movie game, but it is the easiest way to maybe have you answer this. I don't know if you've seen the movie For Love of the Game with Costner, the one where he's pitching for the Tigers.
Yes.
Crowd noise. There's that moment where he clears the mechanism and all of a sudden he gets a tunnel vision. What is the reality, and how often over your career do you realize, whether it's a step off the mound, whether it's a little walk, grab the rosin bag, and did you hear things? Did you actually hear what was going on in the building most nights?
You know, yes and no. I mean, I think it's hard not to feel, you know, the energy in certain situations, particularly, you know, when I'm on the mound, right? And it happens more in a postseason where, you know, you kind of have that tradition in ballparks now. You get two strikes and everybody stands up and they're clapping and they're wanting to see the strikeout. You notice that. You feed off of that. I think for somebody like me, I have to temper my emotions in that situation a little bit because, look, I'm not a strikeout guy, obviously. So when you see that and you feel that, your inclination is, yeah, I get caught up in that. Now I want to try and throw the crap out of a ball, and that's not my game. So, you know, you have to measure it a little bit, temper it a little bit. But I'll say this, and again, I've said it a lot of times in interviews, and I think people might think I'm crazy sometimes when I say it, but it's the kind of thing when you're locked in, you don't hear a lot. You really don't. You're so locked in on what you're doing, and I've said it before too. I didn't think a whole lot when I was locked in. It was, I knew what pitches were working. The sequences just kind of came in my mind. I saw it. It was easy to kind of go along with what was going on. It was the games that you weren't very good where you tended to hear things and you tended to think a lot more because you're not locked in and you're searching for something. You're trying to figure something out, so your brain wanders a little bit more. So you're a little bit more aware of your surroundings and what's going on because you're fighting yourself a little bit. And I think it's, again, when you're in a situation where it's, give me the ball, I'm ready to throw my next pitch, all that exterior noise and distraction and all that stuff is really eliminated because you really are, you know, whether you want to call it being focused or in the zone or whatever you want to call it, there really is something to being there and having all that outside noise, as crazy as it sounds to people, you almost don't hear it.
I read the Dave O'Brien column. People think the bat flip is a new thing. Now, Ryan Klesko, if you really go look at it, Ryan Klesko was a bat flipper. It wasn't as exaggerated as some other people, but he let it go pretty good. Tell everybody the Tome story.
Well, yeah, I mean, in Rhino's case, I think, you know, for Rhino, it was, you know, it annoyed some people in those days, no question about it. But I think in his case, it was a little bit more of the natural finish of his swing. I mean, you watch him swing, he had a really violent swing. He had a similar follow through to Freddie, but Freddie obviously held on to the bat and was a little bit less violent at the end of the follow through, whereas Rhino was just, you know, if you hear that term, you know, guys back legging it, that's how Rhino swung. I mean, he got on that back leg and he had everything he had went into that swing. So, you know, when he caught a hold of one, that bat was coming out of his hands. And I think part of it was natural, but I think in that Cleveland series, it got a little bit more than that. It got exaggerated. I had forgotten about it, but, you know, we did a conference call the other day and Rhino was on it. We were talking about it and, you know, he reminded me that, you know, that's up in Cleveland, which people will see in the next coming days, you know, things got a little bit heated, and it started with Jim Tomey's home run when his bat flip where, you know, the bat damn near landed in our dugout. And I didn't remember David Justice kind of challenging guys that, hey, you know, next guy that hits a home run better do something. And, you know, Rhino happened to be the guy, and he had an epic bat flip. And, you know, so things got pretty escalated from there and got pretty heated. But, you know, like I said, it's one of those things. For me, and I'm not being a fuddy-duddy, it's just me. If people like it, great. But I think there's too much of it in today's game. But I think it you know, in certain situations, obviously, big home runs, yeah, it's warranted. But, you know, like I've always said, a bat flip for a home run in the third inning in August, you know, in game 100 is a whole lot different than a bat flip in a playoff game.
Tom Glavine with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. You talk about watching it this week. It is World Series week. You can see game 3 tonight on Fox Sports Southeast of that World Series in 95 starting at 7 o'clock. Going back to giving up that hit, it's an interesting point that you make as far as settling yourself in and not thinking about it, because people forget, after you give up that first hit, it's still a scoreless game. In the bottom of that frame, that's when David Justice hits the home run, so you still have a big lineup to tackle there.
Oh, no question. And that's why I said, I think my mindset was that I had to, you know, stay on track, stay focused, right? Because a lot of times when you're in a game like that, it feels lopsided to some, because, you know, your guy's throwing a no-hitter, but in actuality, like you said, it wasn't. It was a, you know, it was a tight game at that point in time, so it could go either way, and that's why I think it was important for me, obviously, to kind of get past that and continue on with what was happening, because it was a tight game, and I wanted to keep it that way. And then, you know, fortunately, like you said, David comes up and hits the home run, and, you know, from that point on, it was, okay, you know, you got your run that you asked for, so you better get out there and make it stand up. And fortunately, it worked out.
All right. We had Lemke on a few weeks ago. What's the story about what kind of music you guys were listening to on the way to the ballpark?
Oh, I don't even, what are we really, I don't even know. Back in those days, what were we listening to, some Coolio? Or
no, he said it was metal.
It definitely wasn't Coolio.
Oh, really?
Okay. He said it was metal.
I know Lemmer was a big Coolio fan, and we had, I'm sure, yeah.
Now
sure
we just learned something metal. Else new.
I'm sure there was some metal back in those days, but, you know, I think that's one of the things that's fun about watching these games again. I tell you, you know, I always knew it, but, man, you sit there and you watch some of these games. What a great defender Lemmer was. Man, oh, man, did he make some good plays in that series. He made that play last night in the game where he came in and stumbled twice and still made a heck of a play. And, you know, to me, one of those – our team was had so many of those guys like that that were just kind of unheralded. But, man, they went out there day in and day out and just did a great job. And I to this day, I love Lemmer, one of my closest friends from those years. Still, to me, there's nobody in the game that turned a double play the way he did.
You know who's not talked about, because he's certainly been out of sight, out of mind, and he's chosen it, Jeff Blauser. They re-signed Blauser right before that 95 season. You know, the moves that we're all make, go get Marquise. You know, you get Maddox, you sign him, you trade for McGriff, but you re-sign Blauser, you go get Grissom, and then letting Chipper, Javi, and Ryan be a part of this thing the way they were for young guys. But the Blauser one is the one that nobody ever talks about.
No, you're right. And, you know, I think a lot of it, obviously, is because, you know, Rafi was brought in for his defensive prowess. And certainly in a series, you know, in a postseason like that, you're going to tend to go with your best defenders in those situations. And, you know, I understand that. But, you know, Jeff certainly formed, you know, that cornerstone, so to speak, in the middle of the infield with him and Lemmer for so many years. But, yeah, you know, it's funny. It you look back at all these years and you look back at that team, and I think sometimes, you know, the organization gets discredited because people just think it was the same team, the same lineup from 91 all the way through. And when you look at our roster from year to year, you know, there were a lot of changes every year. And one of the things that to me was so remarkable and so Bobby, every year we had at least one rookie that was an everyday player. And in that year we had two with Chipper and Rhino. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Javi might've even been too. So, you know, Bobby was not afraid to have young guys be in the middle of things. And it was a credit not only to the guys in our organization that were developing these guys, but it was a credit to Bobby to have trust in those guys that, you know, they're going to go out there and do what's expected of them. And in key situations, they're going to perform. So it, to me, again, it's one of those things that when you have the chance to look back at it, it's remarkable to see, you know, how confident Bobby was in having, you know, young guys, rookies being playing a big role in what we were doing from year to year.
Domino asked this question to start the show. What do you get as the World Series MVP? Do you get a vehicle?
No, I got hosed that year. I didn't get a vehicle. I got a trophy, which, don't get me wrong, the trophy's great. It's I love it. I have it prominently displayed in my house. But no, I didn't get a house. I didn't go to Disney World. I didn't get any of that year. So I don't know what the deal was.
Well, at least you didn't have to pay sales tax on a car.
That's true. That's the silver lining again. Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember post-game, like, there's a lot of stuff going on. I was in a locker room, and they're waiting to – long story. But do you remember sort of that whole idea of being handed the MVP trophy? Is this stuff a blur? Do you have real memories of it? And it's funny because when you ask guys that, they go, I claim to have memories of it, but it's only after I actually watch it. I have to see it to actually believe that I have memories of it. What's your recollection?
No, I remember it, and I think I remember it mostly because – not mostly, but in large part, too, because – there's a picture of me that I see all the time, you know, holding the trophy and kind of doing the presentation in the locker room. So, you know, it was the kind of thing that we obviously go in the locker room and everybody's going nuts and you're celebrating, you're doing your thing. And then the media comes in and, you know, everybody's talking about winning the World Series and the trophy and the whole nine yards. And then somewhere along the line, they do the MVP presentation. So, you know, I remember having some sort of presentation and having the trophy handed to me.
Finishing up with the Hall of Famer, Tom Glavine, as we look back at that 95 championship team, you can watch it on Fox Sports Southeast all week long. It's World Series week, game three tonight at 7 o'clock. What do you know? What do you remember about David Justice saying what he said as it leads up to that game six?
You know, it was kind of twofold. On the one hand, I think we all knew what David was trying to say. You know, was it misconstrued a little bit? Yes. Did he maybe not quite say it the way he wanted to say it or should have said it? Probably yes. But it was funny. You remember it. And then I remember, if you listen to the game last night, you know, I remember Bob Costas making the very same comment during the broadcast because he talked about, you know, everything that was going on in Atlanta, that we had, you know, we had been to the World Series a couple of times. We had hosted, Atlanta had hosted the Super Bowl. We were building the new stadium for the Olympics. So, you know, things were what they are versus when you go to Cleveland, it's going to be different because everything's new. You know, they were in it for the first time in forever. So, you know, it was a similar feel to what we had probably in 1991 when the city went berserk. Now, that's not to say that we still didn't have great support, but listen, I think every player who was on that 91 team and on the 95 team will tell you that the buzz in 91 was different. I mean, it just was. There was something magical about it. Now, in 95, yeah, we still had great support. There was still a ton of excitement, but it was a different kind of excitement. And I think that's what David was trying to say is that, you know, when you went to Cleveland, when we went to Cleveland, that buzz in Cleveland was different. It was similar, like I said, to what we had in 91. And I think he was just kind of pleading with our fans to try and get that buzz back. Not that they weren't supporting us, but kind of bring it to that next level that was a little bit different. And you know, I don't think it quite came out that way. And I think on the other hand, it was a little bit of a distraction. I think, you know, going into game six, I think a lot of us were thinking, seriously, this is what we have to deal with right now. But, you know, fortunately... Fortunately, David came through with the biggest swing of the series, so, you know, all was right with the world in the end.
Did you ever catch in Bobby's office, Ned Yost gave us a blow-by-blow account of some of the things that he heard coming out of Bobby's office. Did you ever, something on the field or off? I think it's harder for a pitcher to really be in that position where the doghouse now means come on in and I'm going to take some paint off the wall. Were you ever the recipient of one of those?
I was never the recipient, no. And, you know, look, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I am obviously to some degree. I didn't need to be, you know. I think in our case, we knew what Bobby expected out of us. And I think everybody who knows me knows I'm not a guy that's going to, you know, toe the line very much. If this is what's expected, then that's what I'm going to do. And now listen, I've said many times, I had plenty of bad games that I felt awful about and felt bad because, you know, that I let Bobby down. But, you know, as far as that all went, look, Bobby couldn't have been easier to play for. You know, you show up on time, you wear your uniform the right way, and you go out and you play hard. And if you can't do that, then you deserve to be brought into the office. Now, I've seen a couple guys get brought in there, and I, you know, was a part of, you know, at least one that we egged somebody to go in there, and it didn't turn out so well for him. But, you know, I've heard it on many occasions walking by, but that was the beauty of Bobby. You know, when he brought you in there, if he aired you out, once that door opened back up and you left, it was over and you moved on and you turned the page.
Well, as we said, it was a fun season. All was right with the world, to borrow your phrase, in 95, the MVP of that World Series and Hall of Famer, Tom Glavine. Thanks for coming on and sharing some of those stories.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Great to talk to you. And hopefully we'll see some baseball here soon.
You got that right. Stay safe. Tom Glavine with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.